make me wanna leave the one I'm with. Start a new relationship, true, that's what you do. Think about it, really wanna things that come on with. You make me A, you make me A. Welcome back to Coffee with Yvonne, a show for creatives and entrepreneurs. I'm Yvonne Pearson, your host and the founder of Pink Doll House Marketing. And if you cannot tell, I am still vibing off that performance that Ursha Baby gave us at the big game on Sunday night. Okay, anyway, for those of you who were not familiar with the impact of Usher being on that stage, let's roll back the receipts, shall we, before we get into this episode. Usher has been around since I was a teeny bopper, as early as I can remember. I remember when he was on Brandy show Moesha as her love interest. I think his name was Jeremy, if I recall. But his discography and also relevance to pop culture has spanned almost 3+ decades at this point. And for Usher, you know, songs like You Make Me Wanna, It's 7 o'clock on the dot. You know what? The song he did with Beyonce, Loving This Club Part 2, baby. Remember when I used to come on the club back in the 2000s with your little peplum and your plastic belt with the layered necklaces? You remember when you had that Incredible Hulk? Take it back for you. But Usher has managed to stay relevant after all this time and still stay true to his R&B roots. So to see him in the past, I would say couple of years since the pandemic, really further skyrocket into stardom and GOAT status, because I know y'all like to crown someone else the king of R&B, but the receipts aren't the same. Anyway, to see him perform multiple sold out shows in Vegas, to get this Super Bowl spot, to, you know, still releasing albums, to having a voice that is still taken care of and that can project to thousands in a crowd. Your favorite faves in these days, not a lot of them can do that. But anyway, that performance was wonderful. I'm looking forward to see his sold out tour, how that marketing strategy is going to look with the rollout. They've been doing some teasers. I won't be attending the tour because I'm still recovering from my Beyonce tickets, to be honest with you. But I know quite a few people who are trying to go to the show, so I'll be living vicariously through them with their content. Anyway, we have a great episode for this podcast. We're closing out our financial and investment series with Thomas G. Boleyn III. He's going to close it out with us talking about buying back the block, investing in your communities. And Thomas, as I shared before on social media, go ahead and check those videos out, is a real estate investment broker in the space. So he deals more with commercial properties, and then he also uses his knowledge to help uplift communities by giving them the tools that they need to successfully operate a brick and mortar business. Operating a business online is completely different than having a standalone store or location, and Thomas really takes his knowledge to help those get ahead and know what they need to be successful. So before we get into that, let's get into our What's the Brew. So grab your coffee and let's chat. Okay. What we got? Oh, speaking of goats, Beyonce. Beyonce reveals the launch of her new hair care line, Sacred. This was reported out by Women's Wear Daily on February 7th, so this past week. The title reads, Beyonce's latest beauty venture follows the release of her Saint Noir fragrance last year. Okay, to summarize, she's entering the hair care industry and announced her new business venture, Sacred, via social media as she does her usual drops. Again, if you want to learn more about Beyonce's marketing strategy, go ahead and watch the Marketing Magic with Beyonce on TikTok or Instagram underneath my profile. But she launches via social media and her website, Beyonce.com. This will roll out later this month. It looks like February 20th. And the product line looks to feature items fit for a variety of hair textures. She wrote under the caption, "Hair is sacred. The journey begins February 20th. The teaser shows Mama Tina Salon headliners in Houston, where Beyonce once worked sweeping up hair. Included in the clips are images of women, including Beyonce's eldest daughter, Blue Ivy, getting their hair washed, styled, and braided. The products have not yet been revealed. However, a publicly accessible trademark request, okay, business model, Fowl in the summer of 2022 cleared Sacred for the production of hair care preparations, candles, vitamins, supplements, electric hairstyling tools, and other wellness-focused goods. Okay. So this is, to me, is in line with Beyoncé's personal brand. And let me share why. I know a lot of people are like, what does this have to do with what Beyoncé does in terms of her business ventures? And for those of us who have been there since the beginning, way back with Destiny's Child, we remember how it was always mentioned how Mama Tina owned a salon, a very popular one in Houston. Her daddy was an executive with IBM, and her mama was a business owner, specifically in the hair care industry. So Beyoncé did grow up in this space. Also, her lineage includes things like, you know, hairdressing, creating, like making clothes. Her House of Darion line that she had a long time ago, pay homage to that as well. So her entering the space does make sense. What we should note, and I did a little bit more digging to find this as well, Beyoncé's mama, Mama Tina, who you should follow on Instagram, she is a vibe. Beyoncé's mama Tina will be leading the efforts with this line. So it's not like she just decided to do this out of the blue. She is actually using the advice and leadership of her mother's knowledge in the space to create these products. I'm already starting to see the rollout happen across multiple social media channels, and she tapped in influencers from diverse and inclusive spaces to help promote the line through their social media channels. If you recall, when the Renaissance Tour was happening late summer, there was a buzz about a new product line launching during the tour. And people were speculating that it could be a hair care line because Beyoncé, she ain't dumb. She allows us to see and speculate what we want her to. Dropped a picture with unmarked products on the counter of her beauty space. Sorry, y'all, these braces. Of her beauty space. And she was doing her hair. So people started to speculate a hair care line, and they were right. But her team has started creating these rollouts, showing, you know, user-generated content, personalized messages from the queen herself to these influencers and content creators. So this is probably phase two in the rollout, and then phase three will be the actual product line release. We don't know yet what the price point is, but understanding the queen and how she tends to operate, if the perfume was around $120, we could probably expect to remain competitive in the space for the products to range around $25 to $30-ish for each product. So probably align with the pattern product line, which is helmed by Tracee Ellis Ross. But stay tuned. I'm going to keep up with this story to see where we land and to see what else comes out and if I can get my hands on it. Okay, up next. So we have Issa Rae, and this was reported by Afrotech, but originally shared from Time Magazine, in which Issa Rae is on the cover of the recent publication. Mom, hi. Can you get me a copy of that Time Magazine if you have a chance, please? Thank you. Oh, and also the cookies from the place we like. Okay, love you. Okay, sorry, I had to put that out there. All right. The title says, Issa Rae says she secured investors for a studio to create opportunities for creators. All right, the article reads, during an interview with Time, the actress and producer revealed a slew of new ventures following the cancellation of her HBO Max show, Rap Shit, after two seasons. Rae is making it clear she is nowhere near the finish line, with a project set in the alternative present on the way, in which she will produce, write, and be featured in addition to a comedy centering on corporate America. Oh, I gotta see that one. Ooh, y'all, if you work in corporate America, if you know, you know. Shout out to Corporate Aaron. Follow her on TikTok. Anyway, she is making it clear when one door opens, she will open her own, noting the importance of succeeding in the industry, and she wants to be a vessel for change. In the article, she was quoted saying, I recognize that I have to do well economically to be able to make change, she told Time. That's frustrating. That's ugly. But I recognize that money moves things faster. And so much of what I do is with the intention to help make those moves. Looking further down the article, Ray also said, "We have the investors. It's just about locking in on that land. When I tell you we're ready, we're ready. I will have my little stake in this limited plot of land, and I'm going to make sure that I bring in as many people to live on it as possible. So until we run out of opportunities, they'll be good." I love the fact that Issa Rae is not just putting her money where her mouth is, but also recognizing, and I think, you know, remember I spoke about this in one of the previous episodes about how DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, focus initiatives are currently being scaled back that were amplified after the protests of 2020, you know, from George Floyd. And I mentioned how it was frustrating to see the limited progress, and yes, I said limited, limited progress that we were making scale back because of the discomfort of others. And that there was an importance of telling our stories, because when our stories are included in the narrative is more complete, right? But canceling shows like Rap Shit, Grand Crew, Southside, you know, that was also on HBO Max, it is detrimental in the fact that these content creators are part of that space to build inclusion, but also you're removing us from being able to be using our natural talents to progress in this space in which we barely see ourselves anyway. So to see someone like Issa Rae not just complain but do, I can't wait to see how she builds this platform to create something that will be as legendary as she is, especially knowing that she understands how the space operates, since Awkward Black Girl is how she got her start in the industry. As I mentioned, Thomas G. Bolin III is my guest this week on Coffee with Yvonne. Thomas and I worked together at my former company for a little over 3 years, and his office was literally right next to my workspace. So I got a chance to really hear him, you know, in action working with clients. And Thomas is one of those people that not only does it for the culture, but represents himself in such a way that is professional, that is authentic, that is a man of faith who walks in his purpose. And him taking the time to sit down with me over coffee, even though he doesn't drink it, to discuss the impact of how investing in our communities is important for us to obtain that generational wealth, change the landscape of our communities, but more importantly, amplify our businesses and grow them in a smart way so it'll be sustainable. That time was priceless. Get into this interview, this very wonderful and insightful and at times very funny interview with Mr. Thomas G. Bolin III.
Your whole government name. But he's joining me today for coffee. And we're going to do a bit of a different conversation. I know sometimes we talk about buying back the block and investing in our communities, but how can we actually do that? And how can we get insight into building our businesses, into ventures that are successful? So Thomas here today is going to give us that great insight with his role with my former employer. If you need to know who it is, you could check my receipts on LinkedIn. I'm not going to give you all my business. So before we get started, I'm going to read his bio and give him his flowers that he deserves. So Thomas G. Bolin III plays an integral role in the day-to-day prospecting, canvassing, and business development of Rappaport's portfolio assets and brokerage relationships. Prior to, he played a role in the growth of a Florida-based Crossman & Company. He has over 7 years in retail real estate industry and has closed more than 90 million, yes, M's, bands on bands on bands, in lease and sales value. He received his bachelor's and master's in business administration from Florida A&M and HBCU.
I bleed orange and green.
Are you done? Can I finish your bio, sir?
I'm fine.
Okay. And was a percussionist in their incomparable marching band. He earned the distinguished 2015 to 2016 ICSC Foundation Fila Fellow Award, where he helped increase ICSC student memberships among diverse student populations. In 2020, he has been elected and selected to serve in the inaugural launch of ICSC's Next Generation Leadership Network, a select group of future leaders that consists of 59 young professionals from all industry sectors across U.S. and Canada. Not only is he great and integral in our community, but he is committed to growing and influencing the commercial real estate industry. Locally, he serves on the Young Leaders Committee with DCBIA, and was awarded the 2022 DCBIA Young Leader Achievement Award. He remains very active with DMV Restaurant, Black Restaurant Week, and is professionally licensed in VA, DC, MD, and Florida. This year, he was also appointed to ICSC's Board of Trustees as a next generation trustee. And with that being said, welcome to Coffee with Yvonne Thomas. Burr, burr, burr,
burr. I really hope your listeners understand that this is how you are 24/7. Like this, I sat next to you for many years, and this is exactly how you are.
I keep trying to tell people this is not an act at all.
And now I'm on your podcast. I'm humbled. Thank you for, asking.
But you know what? This was on the books back in, 2021, 22? We were talking about this?
Yeah, I think I will say you gave me, an entire year's worth of heads up. And even still at the last minute, I was like, Yvonne, you think we can, move this up a couple of days? Yep. I got Philly this weekend. But nah, it's good. It's good. I appreciate the invite.
Of course, of course. And I'm so ready to get into these questions with you, especially again, as I mentioned, with our community always talking about, we got to buy back the block. We got to give back to our communities, but they don't have the knowledge behind it. So you're going to drop some gems today. Can you do that for me?
I can, but can we, am I supposed to have coffee right now?
No, because we're recording right now at 5:30 in the afternoon. If I drink coffee, I'm going to be up all night. I'm in my mid to late 30.
Okay, I just want to be sure. All right. I don't have no coffee, but I got the tea.
I got okay, Thomas. I see you.
You wow.
So as a former colleague, as we talked about, I have firsthand view of how you work with your clients to find the right location for their business as a retail real estate agent and broker. But for those who are unfamiliar with what that job actually entails, can you briefly explain what you do on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. And so I work in the commercial real estate industry. And my specialty, my core competency is retail. And so there are various product types. You have multifamily, industrial, office, which is not doing so well right now because of the pandemic and people working from home. Housing or the residential side is a component of real estate, but that's not commercial real estate. And commercial real estate is defined as income producing property or assets. And so my core competency is retail, and I serve as a broker, and I'm on the transaction side. So what does that mean? I'm a little bit of a hybrid. And so, Yvonne, I serve as a landlord representation or a landlord rep, where I help landlords fill their spaces with businesses. But then I also interact with several national, regional, and local entrepreneurs who own businesses, and I help them seek opportunities in space so that they can operate. And so the company, which is one of the largest real estate companies in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, Rappaport. We oversee about 15 million square feet of space. And it's a good platform because I'm able to work with Rappaport, but then I'm able to advise other landlords. We call those third-party clients. And then I have my tenant representation clients, to which I'm able to help them as well. And so that's what that means. I'm on the transaction side, and I help negotiate. Whether that be representing the tenant, negotiating them so that they can lease space or buy property. And then I help landlords negotiate, representing them, pull the tenant into their space so that they can.
And I appreciate that explanation, because there's always a lot of confusion about, shopping centers and who gets to come into those spaces, X, Y, and Z. So why were you inspired to go into commercial real estate? What made Thomas go, this is for me?
My father was a general contractor, and my grandfather was a residential home builder, but they really worked on the residential side. That was their core competency. My dad did transact, and he worked on a few Denny's and I don't know if you remember this model rolled out early 2000s, like Shoppers and Safeway, they implemented like those locks on the shopping carts that would stop. So my dad was actually one of the first contractors to win the RFP, and he secured this RFP and got the work on the East Coast to install that system in the parking lots. And so, but majority of his work, I mean, that was a big project, but majority of his work was on the residential side. It wasn't until I got to school and, you know, I mean, finance is what I really wanted to study and pursue. I mean, I thought I was headed to Wall Street. But I, you know, who is a friend now and still a mentor. He says I mentor him, but he spoke at one of our business classes at the School of Business and Industry at FAMU. And the statement that he made was, "You can own a Starbucks." And I thought that was pretty cool. And I didn't know how any of this stuff worked. I didn't know that Starbucks had a whole real estate team that, you know, would go out and look for specific locations that would maximize their profitability. And, you know, landlords could trade this on the trip of that market. You can buy a Starbucks at a certain cap rate. All this. I mean, I just saw Starbucks and thought Starbucks is a business and that's where they are. I'm going to buy coffee. But for him to say you can own a Starbucks was something that intrigued me. And it was different from other CEOs that have come from, you know, the other Fortune 500 companies or even Wall Street that would talk about accounting or finance or, you know, trading. This was very tangible.
So that makes a lot of sense. So, and you mentioned about African-Americans or Black folks were really not included a lot of times in the conversation when it comes to owning properties and owning Starbucks. But for those who are unsure, like, okay, I have my degree, you know, what do I do next to get into this industry? What are the educational requirements?
So, you know, I've been in the business now going on 9 years. I've been at Rappaport for 6 years now. It's crazy. Time is just flying. And I've seen so many different people in so many different roles serving. You don't necessarily need a degree if you wanted to transact on the brokerage side. In order to get paid, however, you do need your real estate license. And so whether you're on the residential side or the commercial side, you do have to get your real estate license because the state, the local jurisdiction would consider a commissionable event illegal if you didn't have that license, okay? If you worked for a landlord as a broker and you weren't working for third-party clients, technically the landlord can pay you a salary and you can probably get a percentage like a bonus. But anytime there's the word commission and you're not licensed, that's an illegal event, okay? And so do you need a degree? It would definitely be helpful, whether it be like a bachelor's in finance, or I've seen people get their master's in real estate and then go get their real estate license and then they pursue a career as a broker. That's fantastic. And brokers really know their market. Their core competency and their value add is knowing opportunities within their trade area, within their market. And so a lot of times brokers will attend college and they'll move to a market to learn that market. And they'll get with a national platform and they'll, you know, like a JLL or Cushman & Wakefield, you know, and they'll have exposure to different markets and then they'll decide, right? They'll utilize that large platform. But Rappaport's more entrepreneurial. And so I moved back home 6 years ago. I don't plan on leaving D.C. because this is where I've been practicing for the past 6 years, and I grew up in the D.C. area, so I know it. I think those would get you, those requirements or those factors would probably get you closer to where you need to be to pursue a brokerage career. But there's so many other roles. My sister, she went to Florida A&M University. Shout out Lyric Bowen. She went to Florida A&M, and they had a joint program between FAMU and FSU through the School of Architecture, where she got her construction engineering degree and then went to work for J.E. Dunn, and then went to another firm. Now she works for some sort of construction technology firm. I should know the name of the firm, but you know, she's operating in that capacity. She's still in the industry. She's just operating in a different capacity. My dad was a contractor. So, I mean, there's architects, there's engineers, there's attorneys that negotiate the leases. There's so many different avenues, so many different roles, but as a broker, that would be my feedback. And, you know, it's an art, not a science. I will say that this industry is definitely art. And so I hope that's helpful for anyone who wants to enter the real estate industry. You know, there's multiple avenues.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because I think now, especially with college being so expensive for many, mostly like minority communities, it may be out of the question, but knowing that you can have a successful career that doesn't have to lean on a bachelor's degree to be successful is a good opportunity for success. Now, for your portfolio, and Thomas, we worked together when we were at Rappaport, but I know it includes both large and small square foot shopping centers throughout the DMV. Those are a lot of expectations you have to manage on behalf of your clients. So how do you manage those expectations to your clients in order to deliver quality service?
What I will say is there's a lot of expectations, not just the landlords, that we have to manage. There's community expectations. I think every community wants a Whole Foods or a Trader Joe's. There are the clients' expectations. Those clients have investors. They have expectations. What's being built, or, you know, I will say that I believe, depending on where a shopping center is located and within a community, not just demographics, but you have political, you have zoning, and, you know, entitlement factors that all contributes to the expectations. And sometimes it's what's the good or what's the better business decision. You know, the good thing about being a broker, and I had to learn this early on, is we, as much as we want to be in control and we think that we are, we're really not. And our job is to try and pull these two expectations to reality. And being able to do that is an art. And it takes a certain skill set. And I would say managing personalities, managing expectations, is all a part of the daily task. It is something that's difficult, but reality is what reality is. And you can't control what it is that you can't control. At the end of the day, it's what's the good business decision. And we provide the facts and we do our best to help negotiate and advise, but it's not our decision. And so I hope that answers your question.
No, it does. It does, because I can completely relate to that working in marketing. And when we worked together at Rappaport, I worked on the marketing team. So I know firsthand, I chuckle, but I know firsthand about managing expectations and being in the middle. Yeah, yeah. But,
and you're fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Thomas.
You're fantastic.
But one of the things that I think people miss is that when you have this portfolio of properties, like you mentioned, it's a collaborative effort, right? To get that property from being vacant to filled. So how do you collaborate with the in-house marketing team, AKA the folks who I work with at Rappaport, to develop these promotional materials? Like, what is the process behind that?
You know, so recently, and we've had some fantastic director of marketing leaders here at Rappaport, and the good part about having them in the roles that they're in is they understand the real estate industry. And so being able to communicate our vision and what we're looking for and what the landlord is looking for, the marketing team's very good at taking that, interpreting that, and presenting that in a package that we can use to help lease space. every asset is different. It's not a one size fits all. It's very collaborative, and there are many ideas. You mentioned expectations. I love that word because every landlord has a different expectation, and it's tailoring those expectations. I wish the audience could see how big your eyes got, because you understood dealing with the clients that you had. You had some private, some institutional clients, some that were internal. I mean, it can be challenging. And so it's just, you know, finding a way to, again, it's the good business decision. If we have a client that's a little high maintenance and they want, you know, more custom design, I said it, high maintenance, and they want a custom design, and they want to show more photos, and, you know, they want, you know, I guess their own private website, or, you know, they want to see social media. Oh, here's an example. What about the client after we sent out an e-blast? They want to see how many people clicked on the email.
It's just always baffles me how people don't really understand the thread of even something like commercial real estate, how marketing is still interwoven into that work as well, you know? Like, it always surprises me. But when it comes to promoting these properties, do you think that you lean heavier on social media to promote your properties, or word of mouth marketing, which is still very powerful, or is it a mix of both?
When I got into the business, I was trained by a former Marcus and Millie Shack director, and they're known for their cold calling. Have you seen The Wolf of Wall Street?
Now you know I see Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street, I think, is a perfect example. Leonardo DiCaprio is in a small warehouse, and he's on the phone, and he's calling someone, and he's basically, like, his team's looking at him, and he's trying to sell, you know, whatever the penny stock was, and he's getting closer and closer and closer and closer, and then he sells it, and everyone's like, yeah. That's a form of cold call, and that's how I was trained. I was given a desk and a phone, and I was told to walk up and down Orange Avenue in Orlando and basically track the date that the building was sold, if it was recently sold or not, all of their numbers and address. That's how I was taught. And so I do believe in marketing. I think marketing is fantastic. Social media, I use social media. Not as much lately, but I think it's a both fan. I think it's marketing, but I also think it's cold calling. You going out and you prospecting it. And prospecting is actually would encompass several tools that a broker will use to execute or get to a lead generation so that you can close a deal. And so I believe in cold calling and warm calling. I believe in using family and friends to make introductions. Using your community is really the first layer sometimes as a new broker to prospect and secure a lead. But it's marketing, and it's
hustle.
Yeah, it's hustle. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to hustle. You got to hustle. Now, Thomas, for those who started like their business, a lot of times they're starting at home, right? And they want to transfer to a brick and mortar location. I know you get these calls a lot of like, I want to open up a business in this shopping center. We're going to bring in millions of dollars in our first year. But realistically, what are the first steps that they need to take in order to successfully open? So can you share a bit of insight?
The call that I dread the most is the entrepreneur that's operating at home. And they call me. It could be a shopping center that I lease. And they say they want to move. They want to open up in a brick and mortar location. And they ask what the rent is. So before I give them the rent, I ask them one simple question. Do you have a business plan? And you'll be surprised at the number of businesses that call. that want to open up a brick and mortar location that have executed a business plan. The businesses, and we get calls daily. I'm on the phone. We have people who we work with here internally that help source phone calls or help the brokers out a little bit. Ms. Pearson, one out of every 10, maybe we'll have a business plan. Maybe. The fundamentals of operating a business within a brick and mortar, really understanding the business fundamentals, that's so important because rent is a function of your total business plan. If you're not profitable, or you don't know what your gross revenue is, or you don't know what your overhead is going to be minus rent, you don't know your cost of goods, there's no way that you can convince me, who's representing a landlord, to even sign a lease with our people who are operating in the four walls of their home. You have a record of what it is that you've been doing, what you've been selling. Put that on paper. It'll make it easy.
Okay, because that can be frustrating because I know, and I've overheard some of those conversations before because our spaces were right next to each other. And I know it can be hard to tell them, look, you're just not ready right now. You know, get these things together. Because I hear you giving advice through like the office door and you're telling them what they need to do to get ready. Sometimes they take the advice, sometimes they don't. However, it is not up to the broker or the real estate agent to hold your hand essentially through the process of getting your business together, right?
And honestly, my fiduciary responsibility.
Okay, SAT words?
My fiduciary responsibility is to who I'm representing. But hear me out. We don't put failing, if I do my job right, the idea is not to put a failing business into a shopping center. We don't do deals just. I don't want to do a deal just to get paid. We want the business to succeed, so that they continue to pay rent. it's bad business to put a failing business into a location because you want a commission. And I think that's the difference is the integrity piece, and that's the feedback that I give small businesses, entrepreneurs who are operating out of their home. Listen. If you don't have a business plan, go create a business plan and then come back. And let's go through the math. And honestly, that's led to tenant representation clients. Because now I've built trust, even though they called on one of my assets. I've built trust between that entrepreneur. And if they do it right, they can open up multiple locations. And it's not just a one fee. It's a multiple transaction, multiple fee over the course of several years due to a relationship.
And that's very good because it's showing that you have integrity in the work that you're doing, which is very rare no matter what industry you're in nowadays. Now, you do have experience because I've seen it firsthand as well, working in underserved communities like here in the DMV area, specifically those, and you know which one I'm talking about, you know, that are food deserts or lacking necessary resources, right? Through your work, how are you helping to bring change to these communities? Because, again, I've seen it, but I need you to tell the people, the brother who's behind a lot of that stuff is not the person that, you know, you don't see you on a day-to-day basis. So can you tell them what you're doing to bring change?
I mean, I'm more than happy to talk about Skyline Town Center.
Okay, you know, I blanked it out. I didn't say the project.
And I say underserved markets. I mean, I work in Prince George's County where there's a lack of full service restaurants. I think DC as a whole right now, CBD, Central Business District, struggling because of the mass exodus of businesses and residents that moved out due to the pandemic. But east of the river, it's really urban suburban. So there's more density. There's people that can help support the retail. And that's important too, because retailers will not just go to a location just to go there. Retailers view it a location as whether or not it's a good business opportunity or not. They want to become profitable. Skyline Town Center was a 17 plus year project that Gary Rappaport, he was awarded this RFP, and he's worked with the district to basically build and create what I would consider a now residential, was just pure retail, but now with the partnership of WC Smith, a mixed-use development project that was definitely needed for the Hillcrest, call it Ward 7, Ward 8 communities. We executed the first Lido deal in over, well, it was the first grocer in over 12 plus years. And we've executed full service restaurants, et cetera. And I can go into further detail. But when merchandising and that's planning out, you know, talk about pre-development and the types of uses we want to go into a development when planning and when merchandising, we really wanted to ensure that we had a number of community businesses that were included in that overall merchandising plan. And that's important because a lot of times the developer is seen as the evil person coming into a community, and we throw around the word gentrification very, very loosely. And what I will tell you is you have a community like Hillcrest that, you know, several homes that are over 700,000, 800,000. In fact, during 2021, it was actually during the pandemic, 2020, there was a $1 million home that sold for the first time ever in Hillcrest. And then 2021, there was another home that was sold that beat that record. And one of my boys sold that house. There's money back there. The issue is there was a gap. There was a need. The community, unfortunately, had to leave the Ward 7 and Ward 8 community east of the river to go either into Prince George's County or across the river into the city to get their basic needs. And that was an issue. And so we worked with the local community to ensure that there were small businesses. The franchisees, for instance, of Tropical Smoothie are from Temple Hills and grew up in D.C. as well, and they hired from the community. There's instances like that we were proactive in ensuring that we didn't just bring the national tenants in. We also had a handful, or I would say a collective group of entrepreneurs that were vested in the community to ensure this development was a working, living, inclusive ecosystem. And that is important. That is important.
Now, I really appreciate you saying that because, like you said, sometimes developers are looked at like the person who's going to ruin the community, and they're going to come in and make all this change, and a whole new group of people are going to come in and push everyone out. But that project you mentioned, Skyland, which the marketing person who's in charge of it, hi, Kel.
That's my boy.
But you guys collaborated a lot on that project, and it was just wonderful to see that grocery store move into the neighborhood. Fun fact, my mom, when we first moved down here, she stayed in the Hillcrest Heights area before she got us our place when we moved to PG County. So she was very familiar with that space. And when we went there, I think it was last year, she said, wait a minute. I just wanted to give you your claps for that, because that is a project a lot of people don't know you are involved in, and that has created positive transition for that community.
There's a major issue that's happening in the retail industry. I was just with the Board of Trustees a couple of weeks ago in Minneapolis, and one of the major topics, organized retail crime is it's $100 billion industry. Let me explain something. There's a difference between organized retail crime and opportunistic crime. Unfortunately, our communities face both. This is someone who either needs baby formula, someone who's going in to their grocery store and buying or stealing basic needs because of a need, but then there's also organized retail, right? Where there's a group of individuals who aren't being persecuted because of a certain minimum. They've capped, you know, if you go in and you steal a certain amount of items or goods and it's under a certain amount, it's very, very hard for that person to be persecuted. But there's someone at the top that's actually taking these goods and putting them on boats or selling them on Amazon through third-party distributors. That's why there's certain products you can go on Amazon and it'll be the same product that's discounted. This is by a third-party distributor. It's hitting the bottom line. And so Target recently announced, for instance, that they're closing 9 locations. And I personally know that there's some locations that Target wants to open in certain communities. The issue is you have this crime issue. And so I will say this because I think it gets complicated when you start to talk about organized retail crime and how that affects certain retailers in African-American communities for specifically, because I know that's a topic that you want to discuss. If the pharmacy in a certain area is the only pharmacy that grandma can go to get a prescription, and that pharmacy is battling organized retail crime and opportunistic crime, at some point, they're going to close that pharmacy, and grandma won't be able to go get her prescriptions.
You're right. And I've seen, there was a post today on Washingtonian Problems. For those who don't know, Washingtonian Problems is our equivalent to the Shade Room, basically. So I saw that the CVS off of 14th Street was cleaned out because of ORC, organized retail crime. And to Thomas's point, it's disheartening because we know firsthand that these stores and locations are looking at their loss prevention numbers, and they're seeing their loss prevention numbers increase. After a while, the loss prevention numbers are going to impact the profit, you know, overall profit that the business can make. And when the business is losing money at a rapid pace based on the loss prevention bottom line doubling or tripling, they're going to pull out of those areas. And now you don't have a CVS. Now you may not have a place where you can go get, you know, good groceries or organic produce at better grocers or anything like that. Now you're left to just a corner store option where you're going to have to feed the whole neighborhood off of the corner store. So those things are important to mention because I think people have a skewed point of view when they think, oh, Target can't afford it. CVS can't afford it. After a while, CVS don't want to be paying for your organized crime needs. Like, look, I'm gone. I'm out.
Right. And unfortunately, it's a complicated issue because when you say you want more parameters around organized retail crime in the African American community, I believe without the proper education, one might interpret that as pro police, and there's some complexities around that topic in the African-American community as well. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in the middle of a crossroad where I'm doing my best to try and educate both sides to figure out how we can continue to advocate for more opportunities within the African-American community. As a community, we need to do a better job of ensuring that we're supporting the businesses, because I see firsthand how difficult it is to get certain retailers into certain community. And when they're there, we have to support them. Gentrification is a whole separate issue, and we can talk about that. This is not gentrification. This is economic development. And this is making sure that grandma can get her scriptions. And so we can go into further discussion about that, but it's a complicated issue. And the organization that I'm part of, even during the Congressional Black Caucus, we sponsored one of a key legislator's party who was instrumental in ensuring that, you know, the caucus is aware of what's going on. And it's more awareness. And I think it's a topic that we should definitely discuss. If we're doing what we can on the landlord and tenant side to ensure that certain product is in our community, the community, there are certain levels of accountability that needs to be, you know, given. And it's, again, there is opportunistic and it is organized and it's effective as both.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you made that difference between gentrification and ORC. Can you briefly explain to the listeners what is gentrification? Because there's always confusion about what it is, what it means, and its impact. So can you dive into that for me, please?
Yeah. It's gentrification is when there is displacement in a community. When there is displacement of residents who at a certain point now, because of whatever development have moved, there's been some sort of displacement out of their community for higher or quality, or I mean, not say quality, because I think that's even condescending. There's displacement of low income and residents for a higher cost or higher cost product, whether it be commercial development. That is gentrification. When there's a food desert and a grocer is placed in a community to help serve that community, there's no displacement. That's not gentrification. And I think we have to hone in on, I think one of the most, the east of the river, from an income standpoint and home ownership standpoint, is strong. The Hillcrest community, home ownership is strong. That community was an advocate to ensure that the Skyline project or development happened. But gentrification is when a community is displaced. They move out or forced out for a more higher price point product or development. And that's what gentrification is.
We both grew up here in the DMV. I grew up in PG County, so did you as well. And we've seen how the community has changed from when we were kids to now adults. And there has been displacement in a large chunk of the DC area. But I will have to give you credit that Project Skyline, it was needed. The grocery store was needed. The residents advocated for themselves. And the way that only way we could get change is through advocacy, right? And advocacy can come through voting, but it could also come through building your communities through change and working with people like yourself. Now, how can we as Black folks and people of color properly reinvest in our communities? You mentioned like the residents came together in Hillcrest Heights to get that grocery store. What else can we be doing to bring about change?
There are a lot of Black families in Hillcrest that own their real estate. I think the most crucial, fundamental thing that a Black family, a Black person can do is buy their home. I honestly feel like that's commercial real estate aside, education aside, from a higher education, like a master's in real estate or even investing in commercial real estate through a fund or syndication. If you own your property and you pay property tax, you have a voice in your community. And I think being able to attend community meetings as an owner, impact your own community as an owner, when we were marginalized. And I mean, if we go back and we look at real estate over the course of these United States of Americas, our history. Blacks were marginalized. We were not allowed to own property. And so if you own your home, I think that's the first step. Because now you have a voice in your community. Now you're able to proactively make change. And I think it's different when you're driving somebody else's car versus when it's your car. I never forget when I was driving my mama's car. What? I had everybody in my mama's car. What was Drake? That's when Drake Take Care came out. What, 2012?
Oh my gosh! Yes, I remember that album.
Well, you couldn't tell me. And this is when Drake was like, I honestly think Take Care, and we can get into this debate. I think Take Care was like the height. I don't know Drake on. But Take Care, like that album right there. My mama car had everybody. Everybody was in my car. I was on the Take Care album. When I got my car, you had to dust your shoes off. You went eat in my car. If you was going a long distance, I asked you to chip in on the gas. You treat things differently when you own it versus when you don't own. I personally believe that, especially when it comes to real estate. So I would encourage us to just continue to push. The market right now is crazy. Interest rates are high. They're not as high as the interest rates were in the 80s. I think we got spoiled with low interest rates, where the federal funds rate was at a at a certain level and due to inflation over the past, 12, 18 months, the Fed has consistently raised rates several basis points to I believe you can probably purchase a home with a loan at what, 7%. I think as high as maybe 8. Whereas when I purchased my condo, I was at a 3.5% interest rate. My sister was at a 3.25%. And then when I purchased a house at FAMU when I was in college, and this was like 2013. I think my interest rate was like 2 something. So, it's a different environment. But what I will say is, if people want to take the opportunity, who might not be able to afford it now, to save, your credit score isn't where it needs to be. Get your credit score right, because at some point, there is some question of where interest rates will be. The goal is to slow the economy down. It's hyper right now. It's very expensive. I used to put $20 in my tank. I drive a Hyundai Kona. It's a crossover. It's costing me like $40-some. The scenario that I would like to give is, picture someone running on a treadmill. The Fed is just simply increasing the incline, and that's what interest rates are doing right now. And it's slowing down. It's slowing down construction. It's slowing down, certain assets that are being traded and moved in on the capital market side. It's a tool that's being used to just slow the economy down. So it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. At some point, we're going to need to speed back up, or we're going to need to get to a better pace. And so it'll take some time. And at that time, you'll have money saved up. If you're working on your credit score, you'll be in position. So I would encourage those to just get in position. I don't know if it's going to come in a year. I don't know if it's going to come in 2 years, but it's going to come right on time. I sound like my grandma right now.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's getting preaching. But that's important to know, Thomas, because if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. And I think when it comes to home ownership, my mom, she owns her home down here in the DMV area. And, my closest friends, they own their homes as well. And they talk to me about the process. And to see my mom be a homeowner, every time I come over to the house, I'm always inspecting the property. I'm looking around the neighborhood like, why didn't they pick up that bulk trash yet? Why haven't they done this? Did you call them about X, Y, and Z? Because I know that home is also my legacy. And if I take interest in the home she has now, I can maintain that legacy and continue to build.
And you learn a lot during that process. Buying a home, you learn a lot.
It will definitely humble you. But I just want to know from you, because I know, just being transparent, Thomas, you're one of the few Black brokers and commercial real estate agents I have ever seen. Even in when we used to go to like networking events, you're one of the few in the room. And as someone who comes from a field where I have experienced being the only a lot of times and the few in my field, how do you handle that? Essentially that pressure. And then what advice do you have for anyone who is experiencing being the few and the only, whether they're a minority or they identify outside of the parameters of, being like LGBTQIA+, like how do you deal with being unique, in your field and stay true to yourself?
Therapy.
Gotta preach.
Therapy. Let me say this. I got into the industry in 2014. It's 2023. There are more African-Americans in this industry that are in retail real estate now than there were when I got in. And then one of my mentors, Freddie Lewis Archer, she was the first African-American and African-American woman in the D.C. area to transact on the retail commercial real estate side. We have prayer every Wednesday, by the way. She's like a mom to me. And she'll tell you there were maybe two that would attend the major conference in Vegas. Locally, you got Akil Pyant, who's at Rappaport now. Young leader, working on his cold calling, but he's doing well. I love it. Anthony Jeffrey. He started as a marketing lead at a retail landlord locally here in the DC area. He's now leasing for a major regional player. Skylar Jones, African-American sister who's killing it. She works for one of the larger REITs. Veronica Kamara, I love Veronica. She's the next generation. She's on the next generation. She's on the ICSC Next Generation Leader Network. So the 59 people, she's one of the 59 as well. And then there's me. And then there's a few others that are not in retail but are operating in other capacities. There are more. Those are just, I would consider those to be a part of my community or inner circle. A lot of us will continue to say that it is difficult, it is hard, but therapy has helped. I'm not the only one out of that group that's in therapy, but we also are able to use each other as a resource. There is a level of pressure that I believe every African American puts on themselves in a corporate environment to achieve and be successful, and be one step ahead in hopes of finding perfection. And I will let you know that one of the biggest lessons that I have learned is that if you're good at what you do and you execute in your authenticity, being authentic, that people will accept you. And if they don't, maybe you don't need to do business with them in the first. And that helps alleviate a lot of that pressure. No one's perfect. I get out of trying to, you know, make excuses for mistakes that I made. I mean, there's incompetence, but you know, it's a mistake, and we all make them. And I think therapy really helps deal with some of those inner insecurities. I got them. I'm not afraid to say it. I make mistakes. I strive every day to wake up in the morning and do the best that I can. I think there's some intricacies being a man and trying to execute for your family, future family. I'm not married, but I'm in a relationship, and there's some dynamics there to execute and be, you know, the man that you need to be there. I don't have a son, but I am one. There's some intricacies there, complexities, trying to be the best son as you can be. And it's pressure. And at some point, it will make you a better professional if you sit your ass down on somebody's couch and talk through your inner issues so that you know who you are. The best thing you can do is know who you are so that you can know how to better respond to professional stress. And so that's how I get through. That would be my advice. I've encouraged young African-American men. And I mean, anyone who I'm mentoring.
T-H-E-R-A-P-Y. That spells therapy. I do think that this is a good way for us to close out the interview before we get to our quick fire questions.
I've been talking for an hour. My goodness. All right.
We're closing. I told you I'm a fun interviewer. Now, for these quick fire questions, Thomas, these are top of the dome. Okay. No, don't overthink of it. You know, just answer, right? All right. Okay. In your opinion, who is the best rapper or singer of all time?
Kendrick Lamar. Next.
Okay. All right. You've won a boatload of money. What is the first thing you do?
Fund my nonprofit. It's still in the works, but it's a mental health nonprofit. It's a mental health nonprofit that's geared toward providing resources. Only one in every three Black men that need mental health are able to get it. Mental health services are able to get it. And so I'm in the process of establishing a nonprofit geared towards helping, and not just Black men, but the African-American community, those who need it.
I love
that. Who can't afford it, the opportunity to sit down and talk with someone. And then I was the scripture of the bomb.
I love that. Responsible with your money. That's appreciated. And so you discovered you have magic powers, and powers with an S. What would your powers be?
So this is what I would label a magic power, a magic power that I already have, or something that I would want?
That you would want.
Oh man, no fear. Anxiety. If I had a magic power to cure my anxiety, I would cure my anxiety.
We in the same boat.
I don't know. My fear is needed, but I would cure it. I can get so like theological with this. I don't know. We have no time, but you know, I know we all struggle with what we struggle with, and I would cure my anxiety. That would be my magic power. Thomas Bowen with no anxiety.
Okay. Respect. And then finally, because of your job, I know you probably drink a lot of this, but if you were a coffee, what kind of coffee would you be?
I'm not a coffee drinker.
How?
My girl is. She drinks coffee like water. Yes. I tell you, I don't know how. I don't think I need caffeine. but if I was, I recently had a butter mocha. Mm. Nah, it was a brown butter mocha. It was some drink that she ordered for me, and I was like, oh, this is good. It was a brown butter mocha. I guess I consider myself to be like dark roast, but this brown butter mocha was it tastes good. So I guess if I, you know, but like I'm me personally, I'm like a dark roast, you know. I'm,
okay, dark roast with your chest. You say with your chest.
I don't know if y'all want me on coffee, young. Let me just keep it a buck.
That's true. You are high energy already. I thought you were on coffee this entire time. That's just you. Well, Thomas, thank you so much for joining me for coffee today. Can you tell me how the people can find you? Like, you know, I know you're on the socials, but how can they learn more about you, your work, and this nonprofit that you're creating?
What if I don't want nobody to follow me? What are you throwing me out, like, put me out there like that? I'm behind the scenes. No, I'm kidding. I'm on LinkedIn. If you wanted to connect with me professionally, you know, Thomas Bowen III, find my name on LinkedIn. I'm on it off Instagram these days, but Tommy the Third, that's TOMMYTHEE, like VTHEE, the number 3RD, Tommy the Third. That's Instagram. I'm not on Facebook. I'm really good. I used, you know, I post on Facebook sometimes for like my grandma or auntie.
Yep.
That, you know, so that's Facebook. And then, you know, if someone wanted to sit down and learn more about real estate or wanted to pick my thoughts, you can shoot me an email, and maybe we put my email address on the marketing stuff or. Yes, and also, so folks can get in touch with me if they wanted to.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Thomas, for joining me for coffee. I really appreciate your time. Well, what did you think? I told you it was going to be a good interview. And, of course, Thomas had to shout out his HBCU. Y'all HBCU folks, Lord have mercy. You got to let everybody know where you went, huh? Anyway. Thank you so much for joining me for coffee today. I really appreciate your time. As I mentioned earlier on in the episode, this is the last episode in our financial and investment series. We will be moving on to our career series, kicking that conversation off with one of my marketing babies, Miss Arnell Opoku, and which she's going to come on my show to talk about her new children's book because she's an authoress, y'all. An authoress, her new children's book, and how it is affirming our children through positive affirmations and also the impact of illustrations in her book. If you want to learn more about me and my business, you can go ahead and go to pinkdollhousemarketing.com to learn more. Or if you're on social media, go ahead over to Instagram at pinkdollhousemarketing. And if you're on TikTok, aka the clock app, as I like to call it, you can find me under Pinky Creates. I can't wait to chat with you soon. And thank you so much for your time today and listening to my show. I appreciate your continued support of me as I build this podcast as an independent venture on my own terms. Okay, bye. Coffee with Yvonne is produced and edited by Yvonne Pearson. Coffee with Yvonne is created by Pink Dollhouse Marketing. You can catch the latest episodes by subscribing to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.